This is the Friday, July 7th, 2017 version of the Market Analysis segment from Market to Market. Confirmation of a weather-impacted wheat crop, coupled with concerns of an unfavorable forecast for pollination, pushed commodities higher. For the week, the nearby wheat contract had its highest finish in almost 2 years as the September contract gained 9 cents and the nearby corn contract flirted with $4, up 12 cents. Soybeans also moved on weather as the August soybean contract broke through $10, up another 54 cents this week. August meal added a whopping $26.30 per ton. In the softs, December cotton was even. Over in the dairy parlor, August Class 3 milk futures declined a dime. Livestock gave back much of last week's gains as the August cattle contract shed $1.52 and nearby feeders dropped $2.90. The August lean hog contract fell 52 cents. In the currency markets, the U.S. dollar index gained 35 points. Crude oil moved lower, $1.81 per barrel. COMEX gold hit a four-month low with a drop of $32.60 per ounce. And the Goldman Sachs Commodity Index contracted nearly 7 basis points to finish the week at 365.65. Here now to lend us his insight on these and other trends is one of our regular market analysts, Dan Huber. Dan, welcome back.
Thanks very much, Gray. Very glad to be here.
All right. In case you want to go over things again, you can listen to our Market Analysis and Market Plus podcasts anytime online at iptv.org/M2M. Now, Mr. Huber.
Yes.
Watching this wheat market, Minneapolis wheat's been on a rocket ship of a ride.
Absolutely.
Has it come to an end? We saw it tumble pretty severely on Thursday. Friday backed off again. Are we done?
You know, to say we're at an end, I think would be a little bit premature. It was a breather, certainly. And, you know, when you have a market that in really since the middle of April, and of course the majority of it in the last 4 weeks, has rallied over 50% off of its lows, it's entitled to a little stop to catch its breath, kind of look around, make sure the assessment is correct. So my bias right now would say, no, I don't think we're necessarily done. But could we back up a little bit and kind of retrace some steps? Certainly that would be normal in any kind of an advancing market.
So. Now, so that's Minneapolis wheat, but we've been watching the Chicago wheat contract. Of course, those are the numbers we just showed in the wrap-up. Chicago wheat has been pulled along
certainly,
as mini wheat
certainly.
Rallied. Yeah. Given this break in Minneapolis wheat, given the fact that we still have, it sounds as though, ample stocks of the Chicago contract wheat, is Chicago going to begin to pull back more seriously?
Well, you have a couple elements, of course, at work. One, we came into 30 days ago with the wheat market with a still extremely heavy short position by the funds. So I think you've scared a lot of that money back out of there. Now, will they really have incentive to come back into the short side? I think not as much. And as you see these moves unfold, all of a sudden there's recognition that, you know, everything's not perfect around the world either. Here you've got a major drought happening in France, probably extending into Germany. There's been talk now that the Australian crop is going to be starting to trim back. So, you know, little by little, we're chipping away at what look like these huge, huge burdensome stocks. And here again, you have to come back to that whole aspect that if you kind of exclude the inventories that are over in China, the rest of the world does not have that big of a glut of wheat out there. So I think, you know, those small recognitions finally come about.
There's still some room here for this to move a little
right.
higher.
And not that we're going to get in the, you know, the late 2000 type of a massive bull markets. I mean, it's even when you look at this Minneapolis market and, you know, pushing above $8 and you compare it to what it was in 06, 7, and 8, I mean, it dwarfs the move. But, I mean, that was an outlier. I mean, those are just kind of those freaky moves you might see once in a lifetime. But this is just a, you know, good old-fashioned bull market. On weather-related issues, and you know, and of course, we've said all along this year, it's going to have to be a weather event that's going to really spark things along, and finally, we've got a little spark of that.
It has. It sparked things along. We've seen it in corn. As we look at the old crop corn contracts, both July and September's touching up against some 1 year highs. How important is it for producers to get some of those old crop corn stocks moved on this rally, or? Do we let it run another nickel?
You know, and I think as with any marketing plan, you know, you really have to set targets. Yes, as we're at this $4 mark here, you need to move into it. Have your resting sell orders in place. We haven't changed the overall picture in the corn market that dramatically yet. Not that the next 2 to 3 weeks, particularly with our crop being a little bit behind normal, that can excite a few people and get them just a little bit anxious on having some inventory priced. But, you know, when you look between, and I'm going to use December as the example, between $4 and $4.50, that has stopped the market for the last 2 years. Now, certainly, could there be potential to move beyond that this year? that potential is always there if weather really turns critical. But statistics would say, you know, you need to have your sell orders in that place and take advantage of this this rally. If you need to come back and replace it on paper, you can always do that.
That's exactly right. And at this point in the game, would you, if you're making physical sales, would you re-own futures outright, either old or new crop, or would you just spend the money on some puts?
I would probably, I think puts might be the better alternative at this point. You know, one of the things that's been very interesting and works both good and bad, we've been so dead, so quiet up until this point, the volatility seasonally is exceptionally low. So you're not really paying those exorbitant premiums you normally would around the beginning of July, so it does make puts a little more attractive of a hedge purpose this year. Of course, the challenging aspect of that, usually when we look at buying puts, we like to sell calls to kind of compensate for some of the premium. Those calls have just not been, again, with 12 or 13% volatility, they just are not all that attractive.
That volatility is a sword that cuts both ways.
Exactly.
Saves you money when you're buying it, and doesn't generate you much more.
Right.
Now, as you take a look with the new crop sales, we do have a question, and you touched on it briefly. Matt in Amherst, Wisconsin, on Facebook wants to know, is 450 corn a possibility? I mean, as we look at the setup of the spec funds in the corn market,
sure,
how are they situated? They've been short. Has that changed?
They've been reducing that short position. I mean, certainly not have that. I haven't seen the numbers this evening. Not that they've gone to the long side, but they have over the last 2 weeks now have been slowly, kind of orderly reducing that short position. You know, I guess I've kind of maintained all along that when you look over the last 2 years, and granted the acreage didn't come down quite as much as we thought, you know, on the report a week ago, but we're still 3 million acres down from a year ago. We're 6 million acres less than 2 years ago, and in each of those 2 years, we've punched up and hit a 450. And you know, granted, this low volatility has hurt us, but I think what you touched on initially is probably our ace in the hole. And you know, I grew up in the philosophy or the market analysis philosophy, believing that wheat had to be the leader. If you don't have the wheat market moving, you're never going to extend a rally in the corn market. And that's. We've seen that picture change a bit here, maybe not 100%, but I mean, certainly you've got wheat leading the pack this time.
Yes.
So, I still think that 425, 450 range is very doable here between now and probably, you know, certainly no later than the end of August. But I mean, if we're going to have a weather issue, it's going to be in these next 30, 45 days.
Perfect. Now let's talk about soybeans. That's kind of been the story that's been left behind.
Sure.
But what an incredible rally. I mean, we're up, what, a dollar now on some of the nearby contracts?
Exactly.
Holy cow. You know, where does this thing finish out?
Yeah, and of course, I mean, the turnaround is the great story there. If you went back 3 weeks ago, I mean, you would not be able to find anybody who would have had any kind of a friendly story at all to the soybean market.
Yeah.
But, you know, that was the curious part about it all the way through is, you know, when you looked at it from the fundamental side, you go, gosh, how could you even think about being positive on the soybean market? But when you watched the chart patterns and what was happening there, it never really reflected that. And, you know, I guess after this many years in the business, I've tended to trust that technical picture, because oftentimes it will tell you something that's brewing below the surface that fundamentally we just don't know about yet. Ultimately, we all learn about it after the fact. So, that's come to fruition. But, you know, here again, too, you know, there's no one major element. Weather is a concern. Granted, it travels here in the last week. I mean, the one thing I can consistently say is how short this bean crop is. I mean, and I've been through Illinois, across Missouri, now up into Iowa. A few weeks ago, it was across North Dakota and Minnesota. And consistently, the bean crop just seems very small. Now, that doesn't assure a lighter than normal yield, but, you know, here again, too, this crop has not gotten the great start it has over the last several years where we put out these big above trend line yields. So I think that's part of it. You did see the conditions deteriorate just a touch last week, but I think the major element, once again, is the demand.
The demand.
It just does not quit in the soybean market. So
demand also hasn't seemed to have slowed down the live cattle market. We continue to see folks getting out there buying beef. We closed the week at 114, cash trade around 118. Have we found a secondary bottom here?
I think that's exactly what it looks like. You know, we got the Chinese enthusiasm,
yes,
even though we hadn't moved any beef over there up until in the last few weeks, but But I mean, these are futures markets. We're always looking ahead. And I think now over the last 2 weeks, we seem to have found a little base, a little foundation again. So I think this cattle market looks like it's prepared to launch into the next level, at least go back and challenge the highs and maybe exceed those highs for a higher move yet.
All right. And feeder cattle probably going to follow right along as we continue to see profitability.
Granted, probably the biggest drawback on feeders, if we do really get the grain market moving a bit, psychologically that could work against feeders. But, you know, here again, if it is just 4 to 450 corn, you know, nice hedge opportunity for the corn possibly, but it means probably not going to scare anybody out of the feeder market drastically.
All right. Well, now let's talk about the lean hog market, because that's another one where demand has driven it. We saw cash hogs trading over $100 this last week. Mm-hmm. We do have concerns as we look out to the end of the third quarter, into fourth quarter, that we're going to be sweltering under massive supplies.
Right.
What are your thoughts? Have we priced that into the market already?
I think to a large extent, and I think the reaction after the hog and pig report probably reflected that. You know, here we came out 2-3%, I guess really a strong 3% higher in numbers all the way across, and the market still reacted higher. So, one of the great things I think that's happened in cattle and hogs both this year is we have seen, even ex the Chinese business, we've seen a great export business. And I think with the dollar as strong as it has been, a lot of people just assume that was not going to be the case. So I think that has taken everyone by surprise, which has really been that element that moved us up to these highs and still seems to support these both those markets.
Well, now you touched on the dollar. We have seen the dollar certainly looking to pull back. We're down around 95 on the dollar index. As you look around the globe, you look at Europe, you look at the situation in the UK, the Chinese government, where do you see the dollar trending? Are we still the best house in a bad neighborhood?
You know, we're still the best. You know, of course, a lot of the weakness, a week ago, the dollar did push down to the lowest levels since the election itself. And, you know, part of that was probably more of a psychological rally than anything, of a real substance that was having economically. But that said, you know, the European Union or the European Bank a week ago came out and really said we're going to aggressively try to stimulate the European economy. It does look like they were turning around just a bit anyway in that part of the world. So it's kind of strange. On a short-term basis, the dollar looks a little bit oversold, like it could see some rebound. Boy, you look at some historical long-term charts, that doesn't seem to be the case. I mean, I think we're I would tend to think we're at as good a level as we're going to see and could easily deteriorate lower over the next 12 to 18 months.
And we'll discuss that more in the market. Plus, Dan Huber, thanks so much for taking the time to join us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
That wraps up the broadcast portion of Market to Market. However, as I mentioned, Dan and I will keep the conversation going, including answering more of your questions during Market Plus, available in podcast and video form on our website. And while you're there, check out the classroom. This virtual schoolroom allows you to explore the science, technology, and business of agriculture. And join us again next week when we check on scientists exploring the use of genetically engineered insects. So until then, thanks for watching. I'm Mike Pearson. Have a great week.